Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Kennedy, and I'm here to help you become the very best version of yourself. What's up, guys? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm absolutely pumped to be chatting with today's guest. He's a professional motocross rider here in Australia. He's the reigning MX1 champion. He's racing in the Australian Off-Road Championship this year, as well as if MX1 wasn't enough. He is racing under the Husqvarna factory team here in Australia. He's a professional athlete with tons of experience, tons of knowledge, and I'm absolutely pumped to be sitting down with him just to chat about the mental side of racing professional motocross, the physical side, maybe some life outside of racing, his nutrition, supplementation, and loads more. So I hope you enjoy today's episode, guys. If you do enjoy the show, please do take a screenshot of this episode on your phone, post it up on your Instagram story for me, tag myself, tag Todd. I'll have the link to his Instagram in the show notes below. But now let's get stuck into the interview. Todd, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, hey, Dan. Stoked to be jumping on your podcast. Obviously, a buddy of mine who's my trainer mentioned you do a really cool podcast in Melbourne, Victorian based. So I'm currently from Queensland, so it's super cool to jump on and to get to know you guys.
100%, man. Look, and this is something that probably Jared doesn't even know. I've always been a big fan of motocross, and I've been watching you for years and keeping up with how you've been going, and have always enjoyed watching the motocross both here and over in the States. So I was super pumped to get you on today. I haven't really had too many guys on the show that have been motocross riders, so it'd be cool to jump into the chat, man.
Yeah, that's super cool. I'm interested to see what you guys are all about. Obviously, I've got a lot to do with Jarrah and that side of, you know, training and what goes into that. So I'm keen to sort of have a chat both ways.
Awesome, mate. Well, let's give the listeners a bit of an idea of what you're about and where you've kind of started off and where you're currently at today. I mean, there's lots to dive into. Super pumped to be chatting about, obviously, something you're doing this season, which is, as we touched on before I hit record, something that no one's ever really done before, which is awesome. But for starters, mate, how did your whole journey in motocross start? Did it start at a super young age like a lot of other riders do? And what was the process to get to where you are currently racing today?
Yeah, so everyone's got their own little story, and mine's began up in Atherton. It's a little town, country town up from Cairns in far north Queensland. Just simply riding bikes around the farm. I'm a farm sort of kid, and riding in the hills, and mum and dad took me racing at 5 years old was my first race, and awesome. It was just some fun, and then that just continued on, and I started winning up home, and we just went for a trip one day down to Adelaide to see the family. And I raced the junior Aussie titles and I ended up winning it. So that was really weird.
As you do.
Yeah. It was, you know, I qualified fifth, so we were hoping for a top 10 and I just ended up winning, which was kind of crazy. And that was my first Aussie title at 12 years old.
Unreal.
And then from that time on, I felt, man, I'm meant to win. Like that's just how simple it can be as a kid. I went from my best ever result was a fifth place in a Queensland title to then winning a national championship and then just going, oh, Aussie titles in a row. KDM picked me up when I was 14 on their factory program. And then I went into the senior program. It's kind of cool. Like, you know, the teachers, school wasn't really for me. I just wanted to work. I just wanted to make money. So I did a school-based apprenticeship and started making money at year nine. And the teachers were always giving me a hard time and about racing and stuff. And I was like, well, I've been professional since I was 16. And, you know, when the teachers sort of give you a hard time, you're like, well, I'm on a similar wage as you. And I'm in your classroom here. And I work as well as a tradesman. So it was kind of funny like that. And then it just progressed. I moved away from home, which was 20 hours down to Sunny Coast at the age of 18. It just started. That's when I started training with Jarrah.
Yep.
So we built our relationship around there, and it progressed. From there, I ended up landing myself in Europe at 21. Raced over there for 3 years, come back here. And then, long story short, it's the world championship stuff sort of gone for me. That's, it's 19 rounds around the world, and it's a lot on the body and everything. And I love where we live. I've landed myself in Burleigh Heads. We go surfing most mornings. We walk across the beach.
Yeah.
Racing dirt bikes here is what you imagine a pro athlete to be like. It's enjoyable.
Started family world championship, now too.
Yeah, world championship, it's a slog. Like most of your time's on the aeroplane, training. Mm. There's a lot of media commitments. It's just a different life. But stoked that I got to live that. Now I've got another chapter. We've got a 2-week-old baby girl now, little Macy. And so we've got a camper. We've traveled down to Melbourne. We raced on the weekend, first motocross national. And then we've got something interesting that I've thrown myself in the deep end. I'm racing both championships. So normally for myself, it's always just being a motocross thing. So
yeah. That's epic. Yeah, we'll definitely touch on that in our chat today. So going back, Ben, you said you kind of signed on with KDM at 14, professional since 16. Was there a moment where it went from being, in your head or in your mind, just loving racing and enjoying it? And I'm assuming you still do now, but kind of seeing it as a hobby to a bit of a light bulb moment where you realize that you are a professional athlete, you need to start taking your physicality seriously, maybe your nutrition a bit more serious, and probably understood that what happens off the bike is almost as important, if not more important, than what happens on it?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I'm super eager, and that's got some funny stories that I've had to do with Jarrah. He was looking after all my nutrition, supplements, everything. And we had a dietitian come in, and they were just, with the team, and they're like, it's good to eat things like sultanas and, snack on nuts and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, oh, yeah, sweet. So I planned to go training with Jarrah. We met at the track. So I got like a kilo of sultanas. And I'm just eating them on the way out. These are really healthy, like the dietitian said. So being mindful that I'm 18. I turn up and I'm out there riding. And I said to Jarrah, man, my guts is so sore. Like, it feels like I got concrete in there. And we couldn't really work it out. And then he spotted in the front seat of the car this big bag of sultanas. And he's like, how many of these have you eaten? I was like, oh, it was full at the start. And he's like, man, you can't do that. Like, everything's in moderation. And I was like that. If Jarrah said to do, a 30-minute run, I'd be doing an hour run. Like, my mentality.
Sound very similar to me. Yeah, just kind of going 100% at whatever you do. In terms of the physical side of things, what age did you start getting into the strength training? I think you mentioned you met Jarrah at around 20 or 21. Is that the first time you kind of stepped into the gym and started doing some strength and resistance work, or had you started previous to that?
Yeah, so I had a cycle coach when I was 16.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of cycling, and we did gym once a week.
Yeah.
And that was sort of my introduction into being a professional. Mm-hmm. So I used to train before and after work, and that sort of introduced me. But it was there's a lot of different ways to train. And then when I come on board with Jarrah, that was at the age of 18.
Yeah.
And so I was coming down to Melbourne, and Jarrah just kept being like, no, like, you don't need to do so much. Like, and he was trying to hold me back. And then I've realized, later on, I realized that that's what a coach is.
Yeah.
A coach is someone who tells you when to train and when not to train. And if you've got a good athlete, you're just holding them back all the time like a racehorse. And that's exactly what Jarrah was for me.
Yeah, about that periodization and quality over quantity and making sure you're 100% on race day or during the season and not trying to be 100% 7 days a week.
Yeah.
65 days a year.
Yeah.
So with the strength training side of things, how much of a difference do you think that made for you on the bike? And, because this is funny, like, I, as I said, I'm a pretty big fan of motocross and supercross and everything. And I watch it quite often, particularly the AMA stuff, and I'll talk to people about how physical the racing is and how hard the riders and you guys are working throughout the race and in training and stuff. And for a lot of people, they'll just look at the race and go, oh, fuck, they're literally just sitting on a motorbike and kind of rock around. How physically hard could it be? But can you give the listeners a bit of an idea of actually how physical it is when you are on the bike during race day in regards to things like heart rate, maybe even DOMS, you know, certain muscle groups that are working super hard when you're on the bike, that if you're not conditioned can kind of start to cause problems?
Yeah, so it's there's a few examples that I can sort of share. I had an opportunity, I was a Red Bull athlete, so when I was in Europe, I spent a lot of time in Austria where the head of Red Bull is, and they got a training diagnostic center there where their athletes would go and we'd get tested, and then we'd have a coach there and physios and sports psychs, and and they'd have full programs for us. So I'd go there and I'd do a week block of testing, and that would involve obviously monitoring the body. So they'd take all your CK levels, all that sort of stuff. And then we'd go day one, we'd do a lactate threshold test on the rowing machine.
Yep.
Day two would be on the running machine. Day three would be on the cycle bike, and then a day off. And then day four would be a strength test. So max testing with the lactic acid. So I'd asked those guys, and I'm like, oh, so why are we doing all three? And they said, because a motocross rider is the most physically demanding sport that we test for. They said, you know, like a runner, they just do the running test. They're like a cyclist just does a cycle test. So, but you guys hold a really high heart rate for a long time and you just need to be strong. You're muscling around 110 kilo motorcycle. It has a lot of core. So that's just from a testing side of things. And that's when I was like, oh yeah, because lots of people, you know, oh, you just screw a throttle, mate. And I'm like, it just seems funny that I don't have to train. And I, like last year, I went and did a 50 kilometer cross country trail run and race, you know. Took us 8 hours. But most people can't just go off the couch and do that sort of stuff.
Definitely right.
Because of the, you know, the different sorts of training that we do. So from that side, that's sort of a testing point of view from, like, you know, the highest in the world. Then we go, for me personally, I'm like, you put a heart rate monitor on me and I'm holding an average of 170 beats per minute for 30 minutes, 35 minutes in our race.
Really?
Yeah. So really high heart rate. You got to hold it for a long time.
Yeah.
And when you see us do, you know, VO2 max tests or, you know, max rowing tests or stuff, most motocross riders can hold the high heart rate for a really long time. Because that's what we do. But at the same time, we've got, you know, 5 kilo motorbike boots on, big heavy helmet on, 450 with 60 horsepower under us that weighs 110 kilos trying to buck us off. So we're forever, you know, up and down, sitting up and down, up and down. So
I think the other side of it that people probably don't take into account is the focus side of things. Like, I mean, it's not only... the physical side, you're also having to be switched on the whole time. Like, one small mistake can be catastrophic to not only the race but your life physically. Like,
yeah, physically to well. You that's exactly right. I always say, you know, swimmers, you just jump in the pool and you just go as hard as you can till you can pass out if you want. And same with cycling. I've had it where I've vomited and, you know, there's no problem, there's no consequence. But for us, you know, you got to jump a 100-foot triple for 30 laps in a row, you know, when you're pushing your body and you can't hang on and, you know, you've got 50 horsepower and you start getting whiskey troll, it gets very dangerous. So like you say, the body needs to be fit, but the mind is, that's massive. Like, I've had a lot of times where I just get mentally fatigued, where I just can't focus properly anymore. And it's, that's something that's, it only comes from training on the bike. Like, we ride the bike 4 days a week. But then, you know, we have different blocks of, like, I've just done a preseason block, you know, gym 3 times a week, motorbike 4 times a week, cycling 3 times a week, running once a week.
Yeah.
We do a lot of stretching. I do a lot of stretching. So I do yoga once a week and then stretching.
Yeah.
So it's really important to be, I find that being nice and loose, like the stretching helps with my recovery.
Yeah.
So yeah, like the programs that we sort of put under, and don't get me wrong, motocross 20 or 30 years ago was eating meat pies, having a beer, you know, they're probably smoking cigarettes. Like,
yeah.
You know, it was, but they all did that. And then it took a dude to go, hey, you actually win in quite big money, like in any sport. It's, you know, you can make a good living.
Yeah.
I'm going to win every single race. So I'm going to take it seriously. And that's progressed to guys hiring trainers, to dietitians, to, you know, it's become progressively a really professional sport. And that passes down from the athletes.
Yeah, I spoke with Andre Heimgartner the other week, V8 racer on the show, and it was interesting even just to hear with that side of things with the supercars. Like even to this day, he said like there's a lot of drivers in the field that are just couldn't particularly live their life as such as a professional athlete. Whereas the ones that are doing well and are in the top five, top ten every week, are doing all the extra shit. They're hiring the trainer, they're doing the physio, the myotherapy, the mobility, the extra work out of the car and stuff. And it's very similar with the bike. One thing I found quite funny with the V8s is how little time they get to spend in the actual car. You know, throughout the off season, I would imagine you guys are on the bike a shitload, doing plenty of work physically, but also out on the bike and riding and stuff like that. And you touched on, you know, with the mental side of things, I wouldn't mind kind of touching on, like diving into that a little bit. Do you do much in regards to mindfulness with any types of meditation, or do you have any kind of morning routines or anything like that that you do on a daily basis, but also maybe a pre-race ritual to get yourself in the right headspace?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question, because when I was at Red Bull, that was something that the sports psych picked up on, is they hook you up, put all these things on your brain to monitor brain waves and all this kind of stuff, and I can't sit still. Like I'm moving all the time. So what they got me doing was meditation. So every time I was on the aeroplane, I had a little device that you hook on your ear and you just plug it in your phone, and it just works on your coherence, which is your breathing and your brain waves and your heart rate, and you just try and relax your body but stay focused. So it's a state of mind where you're really focused, but your body's relaxed. And that's something that I really worked on. So that's that mindfulness that you're speaking about, because as an athlete, we train all the time. And if I'm wired all the time, sitting at the airport or stuff like that, it doesn't give my body a chance to relax.
Burn out super quickly.
Yeah. And that dives into a little bit of caffeine as well. Like I started going with decaf, like I love coffees. And I started to do that, and I just found my energy levels just started to go through the roof.
Okay.
So in times like at an airport, if I've got a 2-hour layover and I'm just sitting at the airport drinking coffees, when I should be relaxing, my body's revving, you know?
Yeah.
And that's something that I really found positive for me, was using caffeine to perform, not just as an everyday thing. Yeah. So, and it's easy. You go to I was going, you know, to the cafe and getting coffee in the morning, go to the airport, get a coffee, and you don't realize all of a sudden you've had 3 or 4 coffees just cruising around for a day off. you know, so I started to, I love coffee, so I drink decaf. I can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
And I started to just find I'd wake up in the morning and I'd have so much energy. I'd jump out of bed, opposed to, I read an article where they say, like, you're having caffeine and then you actually start to decrease because of, you know, your body's not recovering.
Yeah.
So I found in the mornings I was waking up and I was saying to my fiance, Jill, man, I feel like I've got chronic fatigue. Like I'm just dragging myself out.
You've been asleep.
Yeah. So that made a big difference. And like I said, I really enjoy doing the stretching, and I do yoga once a week, and that's, yoga is almost like that mindfulness, you know, the really being grounded and feeling that relaxed state of mind.
And I would imagine as well, like you said before, you know, averaging 170 beats per minute on the on race day throughout a 30-minute moto. If you're also, if your heart rate's also up way up above 170 when you G'd up before a race and you're kind of overexerting energy before you've even left the gate, that can't be good for you know, maintaining that energy level throughout the race as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And a massive thing, I actually did a podcast with Coach Rob. He's a top trainer in America. And we touched on a few things, and I started talking to him and become really friendly with him. And he's big on sleep and monitoring his sleep with his Garmin watch. And so I started to do that and really focusing on your deep sleep. So, you know, your 8 hours a day, night, sorry, but then trying to get your deep sleep to increase. And that's, to me, near impossible because you sleep and you can't control it. But then,
have you supplemented with anything? Like, have you tried things like, you know, such as maybe like a lion's mane or something, like a mushroom extract before you sleep or things like that? Have you used anything along those lines, or even just magnesium oil or anything?
Yeah, well, funny you say that, because then he started to talk about diet, and he said, you know, he started having his athletes in America, they're all about no sugar, you know, and he started to get them to have a, you know, a bit of ice cream before bed. And he said, because the reason why you wake up is because your body's, you know, starving.
Like,
so he said that the dairy and the ice cream sort of keeps you full and satisfied. So I started, I just have like a little bit of ice cream at night. He also said walnuts, and he was really big on your natural fats, like your avocados and stuff like that. And a bit of diet change. Also, I was listening to a mindful app, so just about your breathing and stuff before you go to bed. And I found, like, if I went to bed, Jarrah was really onto me about blue light. So, you know, I always put my phone in airplane mode and try and do that. And I find that it increases my deep sleep, but super hard thing to do. But when I do get my deep sleep, man, you feel good the next day.
Like, have you, do you use like the blue light blocking glasses and stuff like that?
No, I don't.
Yeah, sweet. I mean, these just look like a shit pair of glasses, but they're literally just like, sorry, there's so many different companies that do them. I'll text you a link to the company that I got these from, but I chuck these on when I remember anyway at night time. If I am using my screen stuff, I put these on for kind of 1 to 2 hours before I jump in bed. You know, if I'm using my phone, laptop, TV or whatever, it's meant to help block the blue light. So once you get into bed, that part of your brain has been switched off already for an hour or two before you jump in, because it does make such a significant difference. I've had the founder of the Swanwick glasses, the Swannies, who they're one of the first companies to make these. He jumped on the show a year or two ago, and just the facts that he was telling me about how much it impacts your sleep, and the deep sleep in particular, was crazy. So yeah, whenever I remember now, I chuck these on and it makes a big difference. I'll text you a link after this and give them a try.
Yeah, that'd be awesome, because I'm always trying to chase, because I know how much of a difference it makes, but it's, man, you're asleep. It's really hard to try and increase that. Like, I'm so used to just numbers and doing it, you know, being mindful of what's going on. Whereas this is something that, essentially, you know, you can control it leading up, but you go to sleep and you wake up in the morning, you're like, oh, I only got bloody an hour that night or 40 minutes.
Before we move on from the mindset side of stuff, have you had any kind of major stacks or major injuries where you've struggled mentally coming back onto the bike, particularly maybe on race day or whether it was on like a triple or whatever it may be, that where you come up to that in the next time you're on the bike and you kind of have that second guess or the fear of doing it again? Has that affected you at all? You've been pretty good about it, just jump back on and straight back into it.
No, that's probably in our sport one of the most difficult things. Really good question with that, because I had 3 years of injury in a row. And I become just like, when's it going to happen again? I'd go riding and I was just frightened, like, oh, it could be today. Like, it's, you know, you become a bit worried about it because you got so much pressure from teams, because we're much like the V8s where we've got, you know, I signed for a team, whether it's KDM, Husky, you know, whoever it is, it's big semi trailers, mechanics, managers, you know, it's a lot of money and pressure, and then you injure yourself, and then you phone them up and be like, hey man, I've just broke my leg. Like, you know, everything that you've planned for this year with me, we're done. It's like, you know, you're out for 13 weeks. Very hard phone call to make when you're, you know, I've been 20, 21, around those, that sort of era, injured. And that was something that Jarrah, he got on to me about going to a sports psych, and I seen a really high up there sports psych in the Gold Coast. And he was on to me and on to me about it. And I was like, I'm not going there. There's nothing wrong with me. You know? I had no idea about that kind of stuff at that age. And it turned out to be... turned out to be the best thing in the world for me. Just going there and sitting down with a guy that he works with Olympic athletes and high up there, knows nothing about dirt bikes.
Yeah.
He asks me some questions and I just was like, man, I'm worried. And he's like, why? You've just told me you've been riding since you're five. Like, why would you be scared? You ride four times a week, like achieved all this stuff. And I went, yeah, you're right. Like, yeah. And he sort of taught me about, you know, you can only control what you can control. He's like, but I was so focused on the uncontrollable things, you know, like hurt myself. Like, I can't control that. So that was something that really helped me focus on the things that I can do, like talking about the deep sleep, talking about stretching, talking about diet, training, you know, all this sort of stuff to prepare yourself the best so you don't hurt yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a good one you touched on. Something, you know, I think the quote I initially got it from was from Tony Robbins, like, you know, focusing only on what you can control, because the rest of it is literally just a waste of time and energy. It's the more you focus on what you can't control, it's not going to change it. You're at the moment, you're arguably kind of in the peak of your career so far, the current, you know, the reigning MX1 champion, you're as we're going to touch on soon, racing in the off-road championship this year as well. And I believe you spent a bit of time, you did a few rounds in the AMA
for the moment.
How was that experience?
It was not too bad. Like I said, we look over to the AMA, and that's sort of everyone's dream to get there, and it's big and exciting. Obviously, like racing, I went the Europe way and raced the World Championship. And when I went and raced the AMA, I was kind of like, the motocross isn't, you know, it's big over there, but supercross is everything for them.
Real sharp.
And it's so the motocross, it wasn't as big as the World Championship. Like, World Championship is, you know, from the trucks to riding. When you ride up, you park under this big two-story, you know, starting grid, where your friends and family can go up on top and watch down at the start line. And then when you come around to your pit board area, it's actually, it's two-story. In each person's pit box is like a TV screen with telling lap times. And,
unreal.
That's
in the GP. That's in Europe.
Yeah. So in Europe, you're riding down pit lane and you're trying to look like there's banners and it's two stories and you're trying to see your dude holding the pit board out to tell you signals. And it's the real deal. Opposed to in America, it's much like Australia, where you ride up and there's a dude under the quick shade, puts your name off, and then you go down the start line. You know, Americans televise things really well. They make a show out of things. They make it look big and exciting. And it's really cool. But World Championship is World Championship. Like, it's a big deal. So, you know, there was a lot of the Americans prep tracks really good. I really enjoyed that side of it. Really easy, away from the track. You know, everyone speaks English. Everything's big. Everything's really easy to get a hold of, opposed to racing in Europe, where I've been in little places in Italy where I'm just trying to buy like a Bunsen burner, like something to heat up some food. No one speaks English. So the culture, but I really enjoyed that in Europe. So it's...
I had Jed Beaton on the show. We spoke, I mean, it must have been a couple of years ago now. And he was saying similar thing, like just the challenges half the time, you know, aside from the fact that you're racing at such a high level, it's everything else as well. It's like,
Yeah.
Once you get off the track, you'd expect or hope that that'd be the easier and relaxed part. But he said it's fucking just not worth.
Yeah, just crazy things. Like we raced in Brazil and we're about to fly out. And then there's only Jill's, one of Jill's family members from the UK said, oh, if you're going to Brazil, you've got to make sure that you've got the yellow fever vaccination. And, you know, we were like, what? Like just things popping up all the time. Can't get in the country unless you've had yellow fever jab. Yeah. And just constant trying to get a visa, trying to get a car. Like,
a lot of hoops but through.
It was really exciting. Like it made me grow up really fast. Because I just went over as a 21-year-old kid with two OGO gear bags. Like it was, really out there for me. But I really enjoyed it. Like the going to places and seeing the old churches and like it's really cool. Whereas that's something in America, you know, I strive for that now. And when I went to America, I was like, oh, almost feels like we're at home kind of thing. And same, you know, we go to New Zealand, it's beautiful, but I want to go to Japan. I want to go to the place of culture and it's exciting.
What was the experience like and the feeling, I guess, of accomplishment of winning your first title here? And how does it feel now, obviously, into this season as the reigning champ? Last year, bit of a fuck up for everyone, basically worldwide. But what's that like?
Yeah, it's the feeling was, it was insane. Like it's something that you work towards forever.
Yeah.
And at the time, you sort of, it's really hard because I'm 30 years old now. So I've been there, I've been able to reflect on things. I've had good, I've had bad. And the one thing that I've learned is, you know, if you get third, be happy because it might be your last ever podium ever. You don't know what's coming, you know. Yeah. But as a racer, like I was racing world championship, I got a podium and I was just like, man, next week I'm going home. I'm going to win this thing. I'm going to win. I'm like, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to enjoy that day because all I was focused on was performing and doing better. Well, that was my only podium. You know, that's what I'm saying. Like it's so for me, winning the championship was insane. Like I really got to enjoy that, you know, reflect on it that I've worked for years to achieve this.
Yeah.
Whereas if you gave me that 5 years ago, you know, it would have just been like, oh yeah, sweet. And then
on to the next one.
Yeah. I got to back it up. I got to win five. I want to win 10 of these things.
Yeah. What's the feeling like now? Have you been surprised with what your mentality is around it now? Like is after you've got that taste of winning one now, is it now like I want another one? Are you pretty kind of, I don't know if content's the right word, but are you kind of just happy that you've got one under the belt now and then whatever happens, happens? Or is it kind of made that motivation to win another one even stronger than what it was before?
Yeah, stronger. It's because it's what comes with, you know, winning the championship isn't the thing, but it's the, you know, having the number one on your bike. It's, you know, what comes with it. And you don't want to let that go.
Yeah.
Like that's probably the biggest thing. And it's hard to go into each race now because you want to win, you know, but a championship isn't won in one race, you know, but you can lose the thing in one race. So, you got to kind of keep a level head, and when you feel good, you go for it. And a championship's it's tough, and ours is tricky now. Like on the weekend, you know, we had young Regan Duffy win, and he's, you know, he's the young gun, so that's exciting. And that's where we see. And I've been there a million times where you know I was in his position, and then you're racing older dudes with experience. So I'm excited to flip that coin and be the older dude and go on against the young kid. And I think it's going to be an exciting championship for us.
How many rounds is it for the championship here?
So we got 10 rounds.
10 rounds. And that finishes up in what month? Over how many months?
August.
August. Okay,
we cool. Finish up, yeah.
Now, okay, so that's all well and good, but tell us about the off-road championship because I reckon this is insane, which is all like a great thing, but crazy. So you're not only racing the nationals like the MX one here, but you're doing off-road championship as well with Husqvarna. For those who are listening, what's the difference between the two? How much more of a demand is that going to put on you? And do you think it's going to have a positive or negative effect on the MX1 title chase?
Yeah, so it's interesting because you've got, so from a company like KTM, you have your motocross guy and then you have your enduro guy. So the difference being is we race around a, you know, around a track that's, you know, 2 minutes long with jumps and crowd around it. Enduro guys, they have all different formats and it goes through the bush. So their laps can be like 30 minutes long. You know, they can race for up to 6 hours. So it's completely different. Still riding a dirt bike. But for me, it's like you've got Daniel Milner, he's your off-road guy. And then you know, you got Regan, who's the KTM motocross guy. And I was like, well, I just want to be both. You know,
that's,
how cool would that be?
Yeah. But,
and that's, yeah, it's interesting.
Essentially what you've done.
Yeah, like KTM have exactly that. They've got their motocross guy and their off-road guy. And then Husqvarna have got me for both, which, you know, doing like your photo shoots and video shoots and stuff, it's kind of cool because you see all the other brands with their guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm just doing both. So the workload is double. That's what it is, because we got 12 rounds of off-road and 10 rounds of motocross. They slot in between. So
I'm assuming obviously none of those clash.
No. So there is one weekend in Queensland where I'll ride 6 hours on the Friday of off-road, 6 hours on the Saturday of off-road, and then Sunday we've got our motocross round.
Yeah.
So big weekend. You know, it's achievable. Like, I can handle that. But the only issue is when I turn up on Sunday and race motocross, those guys haven't been on the bike. They're fresh as.
You've been on
there 12 hours. 12 hours. So,
yeah. I mean, yeah. Obviously supplementation, nutrition, that's going to play such a huge role around weekends like that. But not even only that weekend, all the other ones as well, when you've got guys that are just out practicing and you're out racing for 6 hours.
Yeah, that's right. The cool thing, like you mentioned before, like the positive with it is it keeps me young. Like, you know, I feel like I'm 16 again. I'm going to these off-roads and I've never raced them before. So I'm going there and I'm like,
kid on the ball.
Yeah. So what's the format? Like, how's this work? And like, so you're telling me you're riding for 6 hours, like with a bum bag on and, you know, like it's all new. Whereas motocross, I've been doing it for 15 years. Like, there ain't nothing new. It's,
I guess it kind of keeps that refreshing as well, being able to turn up to a motocross track and not having spent the previous, you know, 2 weeks thinking about that race. You've had your mind on other things and you can rock up and enjoy it. Probably essentially enjoy it a bit more.
Yeah. Definitely.
How are Husqvarna with that? Were they like, did you approach them and ask if that was like, if you can do it? And they just kind of had to think about it. What was the go there? How'd that come about?
Yeah, they weren't super stoked about it. You know, because they want you to really focus on your discipline. But, you know, they allowed it. It's good press. It's you know, we just gotta make it happen. And why not? Like,
exactly.
It's kind of, I think it's great. Like I said, it's really exciting for me. The benefits with the motocross is, you know, off-road, it's fast. Like, you know, sometimes you're wide open, might be doing, you know, 150 kilometers an hour through a paddock, you know, with trees either side of you. And like, it's different opposed to us where it's very controlled. It's, the tracks are ripped and warded and prepared. And like, you know, it should help me, you know, be able to adapt to difficult situations a bit better on the motocross. So, I can't see it as a negative.
100%. Well, mate, all the best with the year ahead. And before we wrap things up, have you got anything in mind for kind of post career? I mean, obviously you're not thinking about slowing down anytime soon, but is there anything that you're kind of working on or anything that you've kind of noticed that you enjoyed over the years that's not on the motorbike that you'd like to pursue post racing?
Yeah, so there's the COVID thing was a really interesting time for me. It was in March last year, so around this time last year I lost my job, straight up no income anymore.
Yeah,
so then obviously we got on the JobKeeper thing and I just went, man, never in my life is the government going to pay me to make a business. So that's what I did. I just started, you know, making some businesses, and we started with a training diary. And then I was actually talking with Jarrah, and he does he's built supplements, you know, around myself over the years with different bits and pieces I have problems with. So he's helped me out with that, and we went, oh, let's make a protein bar. So I started a started my brand up just like T-Dub, which is TW. And that was like a bit of a fan thing. And then people kept asking, what's T-Dub? What's T-Dub? And I was like, oh, no one knows what it even stands for. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. It's not like I'm starting a brand like Dick Smith do or anything and use their name.
Yeah, I'm not really exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So yeah, I just started that. And so Jarrah and I did a protein bar because I was doing heaps of cycles and wanted something to eat while I was cycling. So ventured off in that direction. Then I was running T-Dub coaching clinics. And that's blown up. So that's motorbike coaching. So that went through the roof. And then, you know, I had a mechanic there. I'm sponsored by Snap-on Tools and got a fully equipped garage there. So I went, oh, I'll start up a workshop. So performance workshop. So I got on the tools and in that time and started doing a T-Dub garage. That really ramped up. And then there was a time, you know, all the sponsors pull out and stuff. And I went, I'm going to make my own riding gear. Like how hard can it be? So I started sourcing, you know, gear companies, went to Pakistan, you know, went to China, went to all these places, got samples, dealt with the factories direct, got that happening. And then, yeah, long story short, worked on that for 8 months. And on the weekend, you know, we've got TV now. So we're on SBS. And Fox. Yeah, and launched my own riding gear brand. So I've been wearing my own riding gear.
And is that something that you're just wearing? Are you selling that like e-commerce? Like, can people purchase the gear as well, or is it just for you on race day?
No, so I've started a little junior team as well. Cool. So I'm helping out some kids, so they wear my gear. I've got about 10 guys that I'm sponsoring. Fantastic. So they got my gear. And then mid-year, so I'm still doing samples, and I want it to be the best. So I'm, you know, I'm refining it, and then it'll be for sale mid-year, hopefully.
Awesome.
So we've got a website.
We'll have all the links to any of your socials and website and stuff below anyway. So anyone that kind of can check it out. My partner, Danielle, and I, we just launched an activewear label 2 weeks ago today. So I know the feeling like of sampling. Yeah. We kind of spent 12 months going back and forth and getting set up and receiving some horrible samples and some that you like. Miscommunications and all this other stuff. So it's exciting though. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. And the coolest part for me, I've obviously done millions of photo shoots and stuff like that, but to have our junior guys, like, you know, they don't really get this stuff till you turn pro.
Yeah.
So I've got all the kids, I've got them in the gear and stuff, and, you know, from ages from like 5 all the way up to 15, and I've organized a video photo shoot, and to see them out there riding with your gear on, I've never had a feeling like that before. I was tripping out. I was just like, this is actually happening. Like, this is a crazy thing. And it just started from me. I learned the InDesign program. So I just got on the Adobe, did heaps of YouTube tutorials.
Yeah.
And just spent time, man, like Jilly was saying, she's like, oh, you got to do a video and have something. Cause I was up at like 4 in the morning talking to guys in Pakistan. It's been hell of a journey. It's cool.
Mate, you never know. You might start to see a few more riders go down the same path once they start to see all your stuff and creating their own gear.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully, it's cool.
Mate, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. I've really enjoyed the chat. So yeah, thanks again, and good luck for the rest of the year, man.
Awesome. Thanks heaps, Dan.
Pleasure. Guys, whoever's tuned into today's episode, make sure you take a screenshot of this one, chuck it up on Instagram story, tag myself and tag Todd. I'll have his Instagram handle in the show notes. We'd love to hear your feedback. But again, mate, good luck for the rest of the year, and hopefully be chatting to you again at the end of the year with another championship under your belt. Maybe two different categories.
Let's see. Let's see.